Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Recently, the Portland Business Alliance endorsed the massive Jordan Cove LNG export terminal proposed for Coos Bay. But this is not the first time this influential business organization, which claims a membership of 1,900 businesses, has advocated for positions that put our communities and environments at risk. Today, we talk with Melanie Platt with 350 PDX and Stop Frack Gas PDX, and Bob Salinger, Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society, about the Portland Business Alliance's long history of stridently opposing good environmental policy, and the new campaign launched by 19 Oregon-based environmental groups to encourage Portland Business Alliance board members to state their own positions on environmental issues. Melanie and Bob, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Well, Melanie, I want to start with you. And first of all, I just want to kind of reference this new group that you're tagged with, Stop Frack Gas PDX, because a lot of people are familiar, of course, with 350.org and 350PDX. But what is this group, Stop Frack Gas PDX?
So Stop Frack Gas PDX was a grassroots organization. I'd call it a loose coalition of individuals and organizations who were concerned about the new fracked gas projects that were being proposed for the Northwest. There was a long history of fighting coal and fighting oil, but as we've come to realize, gas, which in the Pacific Northwest, the majority comes from fracking, is probably just as bad as coal is for the climate. So a bunch of people got together and we finally came up with a name, Stop Frack Gas PDX. And the first thing really that popped up that we needed to fight, and part of the reason we were formed, was the proposal for the Jordan Cove export terminal and the Pacific Connector pipeline. As I'm sure a lot of listeners know, this is a project that has been opposed off and on, as it's called the zombie project by many people. It's over, I think, 12, 13 years now that residents in Southern Oregon have been fighting the building of this project. What it would consist of would be a 230-mile pipeline between Malin, Oregon, where it would connect up with existing gas pipeline, so a new pipeline through Southern Oregon to Coos Bay, where a large liquefaction plant would be built, and then the liquefied natural gas would be loaded on tankers and shipped to Asia. Now, a study done last year by Oil Change International estimated that the carbon footprint of this plant would be the equivalent of 15 coal plants, such as Boardman, which will be shutting down in 2020. So this is a very serious insult to our environment.
Well, it's interesting that for the last 15 years or so, Oregonians and Washingtonians and other people around the region have been fighting off first coal trains and coal export terminals, and then oil trains and oil export terminals. Those are all, with the exception of Millennium, which hasn't quite died yet, but doesn't look like it's going to really ever be built, they're all dead. And that's a lot of proposals that have been put to rest by activists. But at the same time, these frack gas proposals are on the rise. So the thing that's interesting about Jordan Cove is that this was there even before there were oil trains being proposed and coal trains being proposed. This has been going on since like the mid-aughts, yes, along with another set of LNG facilities that was proposed for the Astoria area, and that was killed decisively 2.5 years ago. What is it about Jordan Cove that's so appealing to the Portland Business Alliance?
Well, that's a good question. In February of this year, the Portland Business Alliance wrote a letter to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission saying that they, representing 1,900 businesses, were in support of the Jordan Cove project because of the economic benefits that it would bring to the state. So this was really perplexing to many of us. Why would the Portland Business Alliance be in support of a project in Southern Oregon, number one, in Southern Oregon, which has nothing really directly to do with Portland, and number two, which seemed so contrary to what we know about Portlanders' desires for action on climate change? So trying to figure this out, it turned out that we had a few contacts with people who were on the board of PBA. PBA, as you may or may not know, is a large business organization. It was formed, I believe, in its current conformation about 1978. It has a board of 66 members. It has an executive group. And I called a couple of people who I knew who were on the board, and we contacted them another way to find out, how did this happen? And none of the people on the board who I talked to, which was admittedly only a handful, knew anything about Jordan Cove, which was surprising because this had obviously been presented to the board. And they more or less hid behind their expertise. So if they were a healthcare company, they said, we really don't get involved in healthcare, the PBA issues unless it involves healthcare. Or if they were an educational institution, they said, that's our only area of expertise. Somehow, because of this outreach that I did to board members, I got a call from Sandra McDonough. She reached out to me.
And who is she?
She was at that time the president and CEO of the Portland Business Alliance. She has since left that position. She called me and she said that the support of Jordan Cove was part of what's called the Oregon Business Plan. And this is a plan that is brought together by several business groups in Oregon. Oregon Businesses and Industries, which is a large statewide group. The Oregon Business Council, which is a group of about 40 business executives. And the Oregon Business Council is the one who actually puts together, they're a policy group, and they put together this plan. And then the third member of that consortium is the Portland Business Alliance. They use this plan then to lobby in Salem and in Washington, D.C. And what she told me, that they're trying to get all the business groups more or less on the same page to come up with this business plan, and support of Jordan Cove was one of the tenets of this business plan. I asked her what kind of discussion there had been at the board meeting about Jordan Cove, and she said, well, it was presented as part of the Oregon business plan, and nobody spoke up against it.
Now, you said a little bit earlier, that they didn't know about Jordan Cove. Now, I know that we here on KBOO and you guys in your world, we live in a little environmental bubble, so we know about things that maybe not everybody in Oregon knows about. But Jordan Cove has been talked about for a really long time, and I'm just wondering how these people who are supposed business leaders could not know what Jordan Cove was.
It's a good question. It doesn't make sense to me that they would have voted or allowed something to pass without knowing about it. So I think there is a little bit of lack of transparency here about what happens within the Portland Business Alliance.
Well, Bob, let's have you step in now. You've been, I'm sort of imagining you right now as a little David with your slingshot, and the Portland Business Alliance is the giant Goliath. And you've been using your slingshot against him for many years. So this is not I'm expecting you're not that surprised that the Portland Business Alliance has taken this stand in support of Jordan Cove.
No, I'm not surprised at all. We have been fighting the Portland Business Alliance for the last couple of decades. The Portland Business Alliance has been the most reliable anti-environment voice in Portland for years. They have consistently taken positions against every major new environmental program, pretty much without fail. And so this doesn't surprise us at all. And the list is long. We can talk about Superfund, where they waged a very, very aggressive, well-funded campaign to weaken the cleanup plan for Portland Harbor. We can talk about Pembina Propane, where they supported a giant propane facility in Portland that would have put our communities at risk, that was strongly opposed and eventually defeated by the community. We can talk about the Portland fossil fuel facility ban that council enacted a couple of years ago, an historic move that set a standard for the nation. The Portland Business Alliance teamed up with the Western Petroleum Association and sued to overturn that, and eventually lost that case. Efforts to restore the river have been opposed by the Portland Business Alliance. Efforts to develop West Hayden Island by the Port of Portland have been supported by the Portland Business Alliance. So the record is very clear. It's very long. And although we've had the similar experience as Melanie in terms of hearing from board members that they were unaware of these positions, In fact, they are directly accountable and responsible for these positions, and their website is very clear that they weigh in on policy positions. So while they may say that they're not aware, as board members, especially, they have a responsibility to be aware.
So who are some of the businesses that are these 1,900 businesses who are allied with the Portland Business Alliance?
Well, I am most familiar with the businesses who are on the board because mm-hmm. we've been looking at who they are. There are a number of healthcare businesses, which, considering that climate change and environmental issues are healthcare issues, it is surprising and somewhat shocking to me that healthcare organizations would sit quietly or silently while proposals that are clearly detrimental to Portlanders' health are being voted in favor of. And there are also quite a number of educational institutions, including the publicly supported educational institutions like Oregon State, University of Oregon, Portland State, who are on the board. And once again, it seems highly inappropriate that they would be allowing things like this to go by. And of course, members of the press, OPB, KGW. OPB, I think, is not on the board, but they are a member of the Portland Business Alliance.
We're going to make a little insert here. KBOO is not.
Yes.
We may be one of the few media in the city, actually, who aren't part of the Portland Business Alliance. Is that true? I mean, aside from things, papers like The Scanner, I'm sure aren't and stuff
yes.
like that. But how about The Oregonian?
The Oregonian actually had a member of their editorial board on the board of the Portland Business Alliance. And we challenged The Oregonian on that. We met with members of the editorial board and asked if it was appropriate to have a member of the editorial board that gets lobbied directly by the Portland Business Alliance on their board. And their answer at the time was that they had always had somebody from the Oregonian on the board, and so it was kind of an historic precedent. My response was that we did lots of things historically that we don't want to continue.
Like slavery.
Well, there's one. But they stood by that. I don't believe they're on the board any longer. The former head of KGW, the president of KGW, was on the board and was the president of the board and actually wrote a blog talking about how she was going to actively advocate for PBA positions. So it is very, very troubling, and there remain a number of media entities on the board today. I couldn't find anything looking at various accounts of journalistic ethics that supports the idea that journalists should be on advocacy-based boards.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking about the Portland Business Alliance's long history of stridently opposing good environmental policy. My guests are Melanie Plout, who's with 350 PDX and Stop Frack Gas PDX, and Bob Salinger, actually a longtime guest here on Locus Focus, conservation director for the Portland Audubon Society. I'm trying to remember, Bob, if we ever talked about the PPA in connection with other things, probably in connection with Pembina, which we talked about a few years ago.
Well, we have talked about them many times. Whenever I've come in to talk about big environmental initiatives in Portland and you've asked me who the opposition is, invariably it's been the Portland Business Alliance. And to get back for a second to who's on their board, because it's a large board and it's a lot of companies with strong reputations. But it also includes the city of Portland. The city of Portland actually serves as an ex officio member on the board of directors of the PBA. It's a member of Prosper Portland, which is part of the Portland government. And when we contacted the ombudsman for the city of Portland and asked if this was appropriate, his answer was that they didn't have a policy on it. We pointed out the fact that this is a board that actually takes positions on candidates for Portland City Council. So there's incredible conflicts of interest. I think the question that really needs to be asked is the PBA explicitly says that it's speaking on behalf of its 1,600 members. It explicitly says that its board weighs in on the policy positions that it takes. Do the positions that the PBA has been taking on the environment really represent the people that the PBA represents and the businesses that it represents? Do they truly represent the interests of these board members who are on this board representing these companies, explicitly representing these companies? Our expectation is, especially if you're a board member, that if you disagree with these positions that have tremendous impacts on our communities, that you will speak out, you will speak up, and you will state that you disagree when the PBA takes a position that you don't agree with.
Now, is the PBA actually, I mean, it's like the Portland Chamber of Commerce. Is that the function it fills, or is it officially our Chamber of Commerce?
I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding of what a Chamber of Commerce is, and there was really in my mind, too. I envisioned it as a group of mom-and-pop businesses who got together to be sure the sidewalks were cleaned properly in front of their small store. And I think that's what many of us assume a Chamber of Commerce is. Or some people might think that it's even somehow semi-governmental. But in fact, Chamber of Commerce's have tended throughout history to be on the conservative side, to support Republican candidates, and recently to often support climate deniers. So Chamber of Commerce doesn't mean that it's benign. I think that's something I had to kind of erase from my thinking when I heard that PBA was the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, actually, on the national level, there's the infamous U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has taken horrific positions and is like right there with Trump. And there was a big move a number of years ago to get some major multinational corporations actually to withdraw from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they did around, like, and I'm not sure, I don't remember if it was climate change issues or if it had to do with racism or one of the many horrific positions that that body had taken. But I was up in Tacoma a couple weeks ago at a hearing for the Tacoma LNG facility. They are needing to go through an environmental impacts statement process again for the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency. And at that hearing, I mean, they basically were accepting comments the day I was up there for people who were supporting or opposing this new supplemental environmental impact statement, which the opponents of the facility thought was totally flawed. But there were quite a few business representatives. Now, notably, of course, it would be Puget Sound Energy, who is the company that's building the LNG facility, and Tote Barges, which is the company that would be using the LNG. But there was also amongst the supporters of the project, the Tacoma Pierce County Economic Development Board, Association of Washington Businesses, so that's a statewide one, also the Association of Washington Ports, the Jordan River Industrial Council in Seattle, and the Tacoma Chamber of Commerce. So it seems like the Portland Business Alliance is in good company with a lot of business associations around the country that are opposing any kind of environmental progress. So I wonder how you see the struggle that you are having with the PBA fitting into kind of this national picture.
I can't really speak too much to the national picture, but I just want to echo what Bob said. I think that many of the businesses who belong to the PBA, if you look at their websites or their position statements, are strongly in favor on pro-environmental action on climate change, and yet they continue to be members of the Portland Business Alliance and really give cover to these dirty proposals and to what the Portland Business Alliance seems to be lobbying for. So it really is perplexing. How does the Portland Business Alliance convince these businesses or obfuscate so that they're able to remain members of an organization that is opposed to the things that they claim to believe in?
Well, let's talk about some of the specific businesses that raise concerns for you. So what do you see as some of the key businesses who are really actually exhibiting massive contradictions between what they profess to be their principles in business practice and the principles in business practice of the Portland Business Alliance?
Well, there's about 66 members of the board, and so it's a large board. It includes some big multinational corporations like Walmart, but it also includes a lot of local businesses as well. The Timbers, for example, are on the board and on the executive committee of this organization. As Melanie's already mentioned, healthcare companies like Cambia, Kaiser, and Moda are on the board. Media outlets either are on the board or have been on the board, like KGW, The Oregonian. Ex officio members include public agencies like the City of Portland and TriMet, and public institutions, schools like OSU and a variety of other universities.
How about Portland State? Are they on it?
Yeah. Portland State has, I believe, been on there as well. They have been on there.
Yes, the president of Portland State is an ex officio member of the board.
Portland State with their big school of sustainability.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of a who's who of business and in Portland, and also a lot of our major public institutions and a lot of our major media outlets. And so from our perspective, this is an organization in serious need of reform. Beginning with the public institutions, we don't believe, speaking for Audubon, that public institutions like the City of Portland and TriMet and publicly funded universities should be on the board of the Portland Business Alliance. We believe that is completely inappropriate. We believe that a lot of these other businesses need to think very carefully about their role. If you're on the board of the PBA, you are accountable and responsible for the positions that it takes and do the positions that it takes on the environment correspond to the positions of your business. We believe that the media outlets that are on that board should not be on there. It is absolutely a contradiction and a conflict of journalistic ethics to have a media outlet on a board that is taking positions that you're reporting on. So there's a lot of problems with this board. But I think the main thing we're really looking for is accountability. For too long, these businesses have been able to hide behind the acronym of the PBA. The PBA gets blamed for these anti-environment positions. Really, the people who are accountable are the 66 organizations on this board. And part of the goal for the next several months is to make them fully aware of the positions that the PBA has taken and is taking, ask them whether they support those positions, and ask them to step up and be accountable.
Now, what about, it's obviously when you're on the board, you're really representing the organization, but like you mentioned that OPB is a member. What about the organizations that are just members that aren't playing as active a role but still are going to be touted as the 1,900 businesses that support Jordan Cove, for example?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that all of the general membership, all 1,900 of these businesses, have some responsibility for lending their name to PBA, and that I think it's a little more difficult for smaller businesses to keep themselves aware of all the issues, but when something big comes up, an environmental issue, they also have a responsibility to know what's going on and should not be allowing the PBA to do things in their name that is completely inconsistent with their values.
Well, I'm thinking about the very successful, but it was somewhat successful campaign against the U.S. Chamber of Commerce a number of years ago. A lot of big businesses withdrew from that. And U.S. Chamber of Commerce went from seeming like this, as you were describing, Melanie, this kind of benign, taking care of nuts and bolts of business, and seeing that they're a major, very reactionary and rather oppressive, actually, lobbying force, a powerful force. Do you think the same kind of campaign might work here on a local level to start to identify who the Portland Business Alliance really is, and to, if it's whether it's shaming businesses, or maybe not even shaming them, but just making them aware of what they are participating in, what they're condoning?
Yeah, I think that a major educational campaign is what's needed here. I really do think that many PBA members, perhaps not the board members, but many of the rank and file members really don't understand what they are part of. Because PBA has been pretty good at having a very closed process for much of their decision making. I think, as was evidenced by what we learned about how this Jordan Cove decision was made, and it's really out of step with most of the ways that institutions in Portland act, which is to be transparent, to be open, and PBA is very different from other organizations.
Well, how was this Jordan Cove decision made?
Well, as I referenced, I think it was part of this statewide decision, the Oregon Business Plan, and I suspect that I really can't tell you for sure because it's all behind closed doors, very different from how things usually operate in Portland. I suspect that Oregon Business and Industries, which tends to be a relatively conservative, pro-fossil fuel organization, put their weight behind the Oregon business plan that included support for Jordan Cove, and PBA just signed on to it. Now, I don't know, perhaps Sandra McDonough, who was the CEO and president at the time, had some role in that. But again, it's very difficult to find those things out.
What's her background?
I know that she had some original positions with, I believe, PGE. I don't know, Bob or Barbara, if you have those details, but I think that she did work in the energy industry prior to coming to PBA.
You know, I don't give the PBA the benefit of the doubt, and nor necessarily do I give their members, at least a lot of them, because if you're paying attention to politics in Portland, you have to be aware of the positions the PBA is taking. And I think about something like Superfund, for example, where PBA was out front incredibly aggressive in opposing a strong cleanup plan for Portland Harbor. And this is, you know, a 2,000-acre Superfund site where people are being actively exposed to contaminated fish. And the business community has stalled and delayed the cleanup for virtually two decades. And when the EPA tried to come out with a cleanup plan a couple of years ago, the Portland Business Alliance was front and center opposing a strong cleanup plan. They were sending out action alerts to all of their members. They took a page from environmental activist groups and actually had a website you could go to and click on a letter and alter it and send it in. They bragged about how many letters they generated. They planted those fake articles in the Oregonian, those articles that look like articles, but they're actually written by a paid advertiser.
And somewhere it's very small print, it says a paid advertiser.
Exactly. So they were very much out front and aggressive and took a leadership role, a very public leadership role in opposing the cleanup of Portland Harbor. They ultimately lost. They were completely overwhelmed by the community, which submitted over 5,000 letters, one of the biggest responses ever in the Western United States on a Superfund issue. And so ultimately, we got a decent cleanup plan despite the PBA. I think about the Portland Clean Energy Fund initiative that just passed. Yay. That's an amazing—
Two to one.
An amazing historic moment. An incredible advance for this city in terms of addressing climate change and environmental justice. The Portland Business Alliance came out early and was the lead opponent of that initiative and fought it every step of the way. And so, you know, if you're paying attention to politics in Portland, you have to know that the PBA is leading the charge against these environmental initiatives. Our goal is to make sure that all of its membership is aware of what it's doing, and then ultimately to ask them whether they want to continue to support this. My hope is that they'll reform from the inside, that they'll become a voice for the environment, because the environment and the economy do go hand in hand. Taking care of our environment is good business. And the PBA has new leadership. They just got a new executive director this year, Andrew Hone, who has recently taken the reins. Unfortunately, so far, he's been perpetuating the PBA's anti-environmental agenda. But hopefully, as he becomes more familiar with this community and more familiar with the values here, we'll see a shift.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. Today, we're talking about the Portland Business Alliance's long history of opposing good environmental policy. My guests are Melanie Plout with 350 PDX and Stop Frack Gas PDX, and Bob Salinger, Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. Well, we have an image of ourselves here in Oregon as being this wonderful green state, and I think we can be rather pleased with the election results of last week. That I think Oregon voters were pretty savvy about a lot of, particularly some of those rather scary initiatives, and knew which way to vote. And of course, the passage of the Portland Clean Energy Fund is a major victory. But I'm looking just north of the Columbia River. I'm looking at the difference between the elections here and the elections in Washington, where a lot of good things were passed in Washington, but most notably Initiative 1631, the carbon fee, which we had a couple shows about here on Locus Focus. I mean, that was resoundingly defeated. I think it was by about 12 points. And the other thing I found disconcerting, there are these actually opposing soda tax. Well, ours was a constitutional amendment. I think in Washington, it was just going to be a ordinance. They were touted as preventing taxes on groceries, but in fact, they were funded by major grocers and by soda beverage companies. And that Oregonians saw through the sham and realized that this was just basically a big corporate giveaway. Washingtonians didn't. It passed resoundingly. So I'm kind of wondering, what's the difference between what's happening politically in Oregon and what's happening in Washington, and how much of it has to do with the amounts of petroleum money that flow really freely in Washington? And they definitely flow freely here, but maybe not to quite the same extent.
Yeah, I think, you know, the big difference in the 1631 campaign was the $30+ million that the petroleum industry put into opposing that measure. We did have opposition here in Portland, mostly from the Portland Business Alliance to the Portland Clean Energy Initiative, but nothing on the scale of what was done in Washington. I think we also benefited in Oregon from really alignment of most of the progressive candidates and groups on all of these issues. So opposition to 103 was bundled in, which is the constitutional change about the grocery tax. That was bundled in with a requested no vote on 104, which would have made it more difficult to enact any kind of increase in fee at the statewide level. It was bundled in with 105, which was the repealing the sanctuary law, and with 106, which would have restricted right to choose for women whose health care was funded by the state. And those were bundled as a group. I'm not sure the same thing. I'm not that familiar with what happened in Washington, but I'm not sure things were bundled in that way. I feel like we really benefited from everybody being on the same page.
And not only that, like the campaigns, like Joanne Hardesty's campaign, they did a lot of joint campaigning for the Clean Energy Fund, which Joanne Hardesty was very involved in writing.
Yes.
And Kate Brown's campaign was both the state measures and the city measures as well. And there's a lot of crossover. I was up in Tacoma a week before Election Day, and I went up to Redmond, and I saw a lot of no on 1631 signs everywhere I went, and that was when I realized it was going to be defeated. I always just go by lawn signs, my very scientific polling. But you know, you get a sense, and I was very surprised. I mean, I didn't get into Seattle, but I was like on those back freeways to Redmond, and saw in places that I would have thought might have supported it that weren't. And Tacoma, which is an interesting place, is a mixture of a lot of very strong liberals and some very conservative fossil fuel-backed companies. But it was just ridden with no on 1631. I saw very few yes on 1631 signs. So I'm trying to figure out, like, what didn't happen there.
Well, of course, the other thing is that the Clean Energy Fund was the city of Portland, which is a much more progressive place than the state as a whole or than Washington state as a whole. I believe that 1631 did pass in Seattle. So
that's the only county it passed in. It was defeated in Pierce County and Thurston County.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that too. I mean, that was one reason why I was so optimistic about the Clean Energy Fund, because I thought, well, Portland's going to get it. And maybe that's the way you do it. You start local.
Yeah.
And I mean, we started that with plastic bag bans in Portland, and they kind of are spreading out around the state.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on one thing that touches on the Portland Clean Energy Initiative, and that is the change in leadership at the Portland Business Alliance, with Andrew Hone coming to replace Sandra McDonough as the CEO and president of the Portland Business Alliance. He had previously been the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Brooklyn and had a pretty good reputation as being
Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York, yes. As someone who understood the need for bicycle transportation. In fact, the bicycling community was somewhat optimistic about him coming here. After the PBA came out in favor of Jordan Cove, I actually called him in Brooklyn to let him know that he was walking into a minefield and that he might want to consider how he could influence PBA. And he was very friendly on the phone, said he'd be happy to meet with environmental representatives of any kind after he arrived. And initially when he got here, he said, just give me a month to get my feet under me. But then he was totally non-responsive to any requests after the middle of the summer. And I think to some extent he had to do what had been already set in place on Jordan Cove and on the Portland Clean Energy Initiative. But he became really the single spokesperson against the Portland Clean Energy Initiative. He was the main person out on the circuit speaking up against it and claiming that it would raise prices on moderate income, middle class people here in Portland, which I think most studies have debunked that claim. There's a very interesting interview that was done by Laurel Porter on KGW, of sort of a back and forth between Andrew Hohn opposing the Portland Clean Energy Initiative and Jenny Lee, who was the representative from the Coalition of Communities of Color. And she had, I thought, which was a fabulous line, because Andrew Hohn was talking about all the businesses who were opposed to the Portland Clean Energy Initiative. And she said, well, I'll just give you an example of some of the businesses who are in favor, such as the food bank. And if you are talking about the impact of a measure that might hurt middle-income or low-income people, who would you believe, U.S. Bank or the food bank? And I thought that was really an excellent point.
What was his point? I mean, what was his response?
I didn't feel like he really, he did not respond directly to that.
Well, I also wonder if a single person, even in a leadership position in an organization like Portland Business Alliance, can really make a difference, because it seems like there's probably some entrenched direction that it's going from, that's like the whole guts, the whole engine of it. And he in some ways may really just be a figurehead.
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting question, because what we have right now is a lot of people denying responsibility. When you call up the board members, they immediately say that they were not aware, that they didn't agree, that it was moved on the consent agenda. Somebody there is making the decisions, and somebody there is driving a very aggressive anti-environmental agenda and has been driving it for many years. Maybe Andrew Hohn hasn't had time to figure it out yet. But I would say it's been a bad landing so far. We also reached out to them, extended our hand at Audubon, said we'd love to meet with him, get to know him, have a discussion. We never heard back. Thank you very much for the phone call. We'll get back to you. And then silence. When three members of the clergy supporting the Portland Clean Energy Initiative went to meet with them, they locked their doors and hid in the back of the office and had those people removed from the building. This is not the way we do business in Portland. So my hope is that Andrew Hohn will learn some lessons from the experience recently, the absolutely overwhelming defeat of his opposition and the passage of the Portland Clean Energy Fund, and realize that it is time to reach out, embrace the community, have a discussion, and figure out whether this is really the path they want to be on. With regards to climate change, the Portland Business Alliance has absolutely been on the wrong side of the issue for years. And they're on the wrong side of history. And, you know, it's not just the Portland Clean Energy Fund. It was supporting the Pembina propane facility. It was...
that was back in 2015, right?
Right. It was litigating with the oil companies to overturn the Portland fossil fuel ban. And now Portland Clean Energy Fund in Jordan Cove. This is an aggressive anti-environmental agenda, and particularly when it comes to climate change, it appears that they have not only opposed these things, they have gone out of their way to be in a leadership position of opposing them. Again, that puts them on the wrong side of our community and the wrong side of history.
Now, I'm just wondering, what are some like major businesses in Portland that aren't members of the Portland Business Alliance? I mean, obviously the food bank isn't, I would take it.
I know that there are some alternative business organizations, and I can't really speak directly to, you know, who their membership is, but Tom Kelly from the Neil Kelly Remodelers went and started an organization, I believe it's called Business for Climate in Portland, and he was distressed because the Portland Business Alliance once again was taking a position against the cap and invest bill in the state legislature. So I believe that their business organization is primarily focused around that push to get a price on carbon statewide. And then there's also another business organization called Business for Better Portland, which doesn't present itself as the same kind of trade group, is more interested in community building, but they also have taken positive positions in terms of the climate.
Now, there's a push amongst a bunch of businesses in Portland, and I'm assuming around the country, to become B corporations, where you have a different bottom line than just the bottom line. And two that come to mind, the first one, I think, was New Seasons, and now Grand Central Baking is also a B corporation. I'm wondering if either one of those businesses is part of the Portland Business Alliance.
I believe they are not.
Yeah, and I don't have a list of the 1,900 businesses that are part of the Portland Business Alliance in front of me, so I'd hesitate to
Google it real fast. I'm thinking that there are a lot of businesses in Portland. I mean, I guess another one I was remembering is Powell Books, which has sometimes come out on the wrong side of issues. But do you have any idea with them?
I believe they are not a member also.
Because I'm just thinking that we think about our favorite small or local businesses. Some of them are not that small. That are trying to do the right thing, at least in some ways, maybe not around union issues sometimes, but they are, at least particularly around climate change and sustainable issues. And I'm wondering if there is a way to help them and support them as a community to become a bulwark against the kind of policies that Portland Business Alliance is pushing.
I think there is that opportunity. I think what you're going to see in the coming weeks and months is really a much more aggressive campaign from a variety of organizations to reform the PBA, to make sure its membership is aware of the positions it's taking, and to urge them to speak up and speak out, or to find alternative business associations that do better represent the values of this community. What's not acceptable is for businesses simply to stand passively and silently by and acquiesce. And silence is acquiescence. At some point, silence is acquiescence. And so, I think the first step is really to make sure they are aware, and then to hold businesses accountable. They continue to support this anti-environment agenda.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that has become clearer as the risk of climate change is more widespread and well known now is that people are no longer climate deniers. For instance, Andrew Hohn came out and said climate change is real. But many people are what we now call solutions deniers, meaning that, yes, climate change is real, but this solution won't work. And oh, by the way, this solution won't work. And no, that solution is bad for business. And so I think what we have to realize is that position of being a solution denier is really morally bankrupt also, in addition to being a climate change denier. And I mean, if you just look at the cost of climate change. You think about the costs of the wildfires, the costs of the floods. It's so clear that the cost of climate change is so far exceeding any other kind of cost of, you know, not building a terminal for those few jobs that might be engendered by it, that the cost-benefit analysis has really shifted. So I got to believe the businesses are going to get smarter here. I just cannot understand how they would continue to oppose things that we definitely need to do within the next decade.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking about the Portland Business Alliance's long history of opposing serviceable environmental policy. And we're talking with Melanie Platt with 350 PDX and Stop Frack Gas PDX, and Bob Salinger, Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. Well, in the remaining time, I'd like to talk maybe more specifically about what can be done to really either transform the Portland Business Alliance, make their membership accountable. And also, I keep thinking about how we can succumb to a certain kind of complacency here in Oregon. Like a friend of mine in Tacoma texted me the other day, Oregon is golden because of our of our election results. Well, no, I don't think Oregon is golden at all. I mean, when you live in Tacoma, maybe Oregon and Portland seem like heaven and paradise. But there's a whole lot of work we need to be doing here. And it seems like no matter what good things happen here, there's always forces that are trying to drag us back. So how do we prevent that from happening?
Well, I mean, I think it's about, you know, having a vision for the Portland Business Alliance. They have an opportunity. We're doing some very visionary things here, whether it's the fossil fuel ban in Portland or the passage of the Portland Clean Energy Fund. We have a lot of challenges, but we're also doing cutting-edge work here. And the Portland Business Alliance has an opportunity to become part of that. They could become the greenest chamber of commerce in the United States. They have an amazing amount of resources and expertise. And if they put that to positive use and actually took a real leadership role and started working with the community rather than consistently against it, there's a tremendous opportunity here. And I'm not talking here about greenwashing or platitudes, as Melanie's already talked about, where they recognize climate change but oppose all solutions. I'm talking about really being innovative, being cutting edge, and figuring out how to put their resources to work to move this agenda forward. We do have tremendous challenges still in the city in terms of pollution, in terms of natural resource protection, as well as many other social issues as well.
Homelessness.
Homelessness, I mean, certainly, but I was thinking about the environment here. They have an opportunity to take a leadership role instead of consistently, whether we're talking about environmental issues or other social issues, being in the role of saying no. And for too long, that's been their modus operandi.
Well, I'm just thinking about, is there anybody within there, within the Portland Business Alliance, who is a potential ally who could help you work from the inside?
We've been talking about how we might approach perhaps groups of members on the board, perhaps go to the different healthcare representatives. That seems to me like relatively low-hanging fruit in terms of people who might take a stand on the environment. I think we're still developing a strategy of exactly what to do. One of the, I think, easy things that the Portland Business Alliance could potentially do to show that they are not opponents of every solution that's proposed would be to write another letter to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission saying, oh, we changed our mind. We are no longer in favor of Jordan Cove because the International Panel on Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has told us that we only have a decade at most, and we now realize that this was a wrong-headed position to take. I would love to see the Portland Business Alliance do that, and would definitely change my attitude towards them. I think it would be a good first step and should be pretty easy for them to do.
What's the chances of that happening?
Probably pretty small.
I mean, but maybe.
But maybe.
I mean, it's a good vision. I'm just thinking, well, how do you make that happen? What would be the steps to get to that point?
Well, I think there needs to be a longer-term strategy as well. But, I think there's an opportunity here for members to step up and speak out. We'd be happy to talk with any member that wants to reach out to us. We'll be reaching out to them as well. But they can certainly reach out first, and they can reach back. As has already been said, I mean, I think Jordan Cove does represent a real opportunity, and they have been called upon to reverse their position. We hope they're taking that seriously, and they're looking at it, and they're having a discussion, and that would be an important first step. They missed the boat on Portland Clean Energy Fund. People did go to them repeatedly and ask them to think harder about it, and when the clergy went to meet with them, they locked their doors and hid in the back. So they've missed the opportunity there. But they have opportunities ahead to take a different approach. And, you know, that's an important thing for them to do, for the community to see after a long, long track record of being on the wrong side of these issues, that they're able to rethink them and do things differently.
Well, I wonder if there's any lessons for them from the elections. I mean, maybe we can spend a couple moments now just kind of reviewing. Well, we did a little bit of that already. But, I mean, the elections here in Oregon were very encouraging. And there was, I mean, there wasn't the same kind of big money as there was in Washington defeating progressive concerns and candidates. But there certainly were a lot of efforts. And there was a lot of dirty politics that went along, especially with the governor's race. But let's talk a moment for, like, the governor's race. And what is that? What kind of message does that give to groups like the Portland Business Alliance?
Well, I think it is optimistic in terms of our fight against Jordan Cove because the governor does have some say over what happens to Jordan Cove in the Department of State Lands, the State Land Board.
And also DEQ.
DEQ, yeah. Yes. I mean, that's a process that she has said she will allow it to Go through what processes need to occur. And so I think that it's reassuring that Kate Brown was elected because Newt Bueller was very much in favor of the Jordan Cove project.
And Newt Bueller was getting millions of dollars from Oregon's multi-billionaires. And so, I mean, that's where I'm looking at it and thinking, well, there was a strong rebuke, I think, in Oregon of that kind of business as usual, billionaires being able to dictate what happens. I mean, that's my opinion. I'm just wondering if you guys sort of see things a similar way.
I think I do, although it wasn't. Would be nice if it was a huge 10-20% increase in the vote, but it is still, I'll take it.
You know, I would focus a little more at the local level, and I think one of the really, really significant things that happened in this campaign was the alignment of environmental groups, environmental justice groups, other socially progressive groups, neighborhoods groups. What we saw in this election was profound, and the grassroots effort that went into this election with multiple campaigns working together across issues, syncing up resources and hitting the streets, because these were true grassroots campaigns.
You're talking in Oregon now.
I'm talking about Portland, in the metro region.
Yeah.
The metro housing measure, PSEF, and others.
Clean elections.
It was an incredible grassroots effort. I think that coalition is going to stand. I think it's going to get stronger. So I think the political landscape has changed after this election in a way that's very, very positive locally. And if I were the Portland Business Alliance, I'd be paying very close attention to that as well.
Oh, I got a kind of a strange phone call a couple days before the election. And it was some state senator whose name I didn't recognize from Oregon who was identified as a Republican. And he said, "Portland liberals are taking over Oregon. You need to stop this. You must vote Republican." And up and down the ballot, I'm thinking, boy, do you have the wrong household. But I also thought this is an indication that the Republicans in Oregon are kind of desperate. I mean, that they don't even have the kind of voter rolls that all the Democratic candidates have. So they knew how to target their potential voters. This was a get out the vote call. This was not like something back in September. And it just gave me a sense that the political landscape in Oregon, not just in Portland, but in Oregon itself, has really shifted. And I mean, I don't like the idea of Portland liberals taking over the state, because I think Portland liberals can learn a lot from other parts of the state and need to listen more. But the fact that there's some very good ideas in Portland that are starting to permeate throughout the state, I find kind of exciting.
I think the whole state is shifting. I don't think it's necessarily visible all the time, and we're living in an incredibly polarized era. But for example, if you look at the coast and you look at the demographics on the coast, it is shifting away from extraction-based industries. A lot of people moving there from the urban environment, from other places. It is really shifting. I think we're going to see the politics shift with it. Other places will probably be slower.
And Bend is shifting a lot, too.
Right. So, I mean, you know, I think we're going to see some profound shifts, and that's nothing new in the next several years. I think we are seeing in part for because of our president, a much more cohesive movement on the left as well that is coming together. So hopefully, that will sustain us.
Any last thoughts, Melanie?
Well, this is not deep, but it's specific. I want to get back to the fossil fuel ordinance because that has not yet gone into effect due to all the appeals, and there is still the possibility of an appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States.
This is the fossil fuel ban,
okay. Right, which prevented new fossil fuel facilities or significant expansions here in Portland. It has been appealed through many layers. They have one last chance to appeal it to the Supreme Court of the United States. We do not yet know if they're going to do that. The Western States Petroleum Alliance was a party to a request to delay the due date for that appeal. And I don't know if I find this hopeful or not, but the Portland Business Alliance was not a party to that request for delay. But if it does come to pass that it is appealed to the Supreme Court, then I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Portland Business Alliance does.
Interesting to see what Brett Kavanaugh does, too, since lately he's been voting with the liberals. Well, anyway, it's great to talk with you guys. And this is, I think, a good eye-opener for many listeners. This is one more group to watch out for and to think a lot more about who they are, the Portland Business Alliance. So thanks, Melanie and Bob, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we've been talking with Melanie Plout, who's with 350 PDX and Stop Frack Gas PDX, and Bob Salinger, Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus or locus-focus. Next week, we'll be doing an election retrospective and forecast for the upcoming legislative sessions in Washington and Oregon, as well as an update on fossil fuel struggles with Sightline Institute's Eric DePlace. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Tom Waits. I think music very appropriate for the Portland Business Alliance. Thanks for listening.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Jesus' mighty sword, and they'll shield you with their wings and keep you close to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil way down.